Namaste, it's Rebecca. We are in month 5, and we are taking a look at embracing your Dharma. Today, I wanted to take a moment to invite you to deepen your understanding of the 5 Dharma types and take a look at what you've identified as your type as a tool for understanding on a deeper kind of maybe cosmic level, the path that you're on. It can be a helpful tool for context. It can be a helpful tool as a reminder for those times when you feel frustrated or like things must not be going in the right direction. So I wanted to give you some insight into each of the Dharma types. I've also found it really helpful, not just for understanding myself, but for understanding other people and where they're coming from and what matters to them the most and how they go about living their life. So all of the Dharma types, just like the doshas we'll be talking about next month, are based on 2 things. One is the 5 elements, okay? Everything is based on the 5 elements: earth, fire, water, air, and space. And the second thing that the types come out of is this yogic concept of bodies, okay? Or sheaths, really, of the body. We talked about these in month 1. I took you through a meditation of focusing your awareness or bringing your awareness to how each body felt the day that we started. So the sheaths in yoga are like nesting dolls, okay, where the physical body is in the center, okay, and that's the flesh. And as you move outward, there are different bodies or sheaths to the body that exist kind of on top of that, all around, as sheaths one on top of the other, and they become more and more and more subtle as you go outward from the physical body. So we've talked a bit about energy. Sometimes you can feel the sheaths energetically. We won't get too much into that, but I just wanted to point out the sheaths of the body because the Dharma types are related directly to them. And understanding them as nesting dolls with the physical body at the center and working outward as we move through each sheath helps you understand kind of the learning curve of each Dharma's path. Okay, so none of the Dharma types are better or worse than the others. There's no higher or lower in value. Okay, they all contribute. What they contribute to the world is all equally needed and of equal value, and every path has its own honor, its own value, and its own dignity, all right? It deserves respect and admiration and gratitude from all the others. So there's no higher or lower. There's no kind of ladder, but there can be a difference in learning curve, or say length of path, or types of skills, number of skills and attentions to attune yourself to before a certain type will feel that they are centered and that they are living in purpose, on purpose, and that they feel fulfilled, okay? Some types have a longer learning curve. Some types have to master kind of more elements to their existence than others do in order to feel that sense of fulfillment and connection and contentment. So it can be differences. So let's talk about these 5 bodies. There is, as I said, the physical body, okay, or the flesh or food body, sometimes it's called, and that's through which we navigate the material world. Okay, that's pretty obvious. We exist in the body, we move about, we do work. Then the next body out is the energy body, okay, and that's the energy field that's associated with sustaining the physical body, Okay, and it's the energy is the connection between the body and the mind. So we're going to talk about the energy body. And then we have the sensory body. Okay, and that is like the processor of sensory input, what we feel from touch, what we smell, what we can sense in the physical world and bring in and process. That's the sensory body is attributed to that kind of intelligence. Next is the wisdom body, which is related to what we talk about as the higher mind, okay? That seat of wisdom, the functioning of discernment, the processing or creating additional awareness, all those are functions of what yoga would call the wisdom sheath of the body. And then lastly, farthest on the outside, if we were to wrap our physical body in sheaths, is the bliss body, which is about transcendence. It's about merging into wholeness with the universe. So you can see that's the least material, that's the least physical, and the most ethereal. So those are each of the five bodies. And as I said, each dharma type relates to each one of these bodies as it does an element. So by understanding which element is related to your type and which body, you can come to integrate or internalize a sense of a deeper understanding of what that type's function is, how it operates. You get a sense of its place in the whole, so to speak. From this, I also want to touch on the fact that each type has a certain intelligence. Again, it's not about a hierarchy. It's not an amount of intelligence that differs. It's the kind of type of the intelligence, okay? The quality of it, meaning what type of intelligence, how does it exhibit itself, as opposed to like the quantity of intelligence. And of course, then coming from that, each type tends to speak its own language. Okay, it expresses in a certain manner, and we're going to call that a language. So, as I said, if you think about these sheaths as nesting dolls, you'll start to understand that as you move outward in the associated body from the physical body, you'll see that those types associated with the outer bodies must learn all the bodies in between, okay, which creates a longer learning curve. So let's get a little concrete about this because I understand that I'm being quite conceptual and a lot of this is probably very new to you. I have given you a PDF handout that is about the paths of the five dharma types. And for each one, we're going to talk about several different things. And you have this here for your quick reference. I'm going to start with the laborer, who is related to the physical flesh body, okay? So the innermost body and the most material, okay? So the laborer helps us nurture and sustain ourselves, like, in the material world. It's her drive is to care. Okay, it's about sustenance, it's about nurturance, but they most feel fear ridicule. Their element is earth. So you can imagine people living kind of very close to the earth, doing tasks that are growing of food, are caring for the body, are exhibiting love, are nurturing children, are crafting furniture, things like that. And as I said, the body is the physical body. Now, the intellect of the neighbor of the laborer is emotional. And what I mean is the gut feeling that you get in your body. Okay, good instincts. And the language is touch. So touching others in affection, working with their hands, demonstrating care, affection, expressing language in works or acts, okay, using the physical body to express, either literally through movement, but more likely through work that creates something that demonstrates an expression. Aside from that, there could be all kinds of variations in vocations and interests and whatnot. So the laborer who lives, as I said, in the body can be considered the, quote, most fully equipped, okay, for life of all of the Dharma types. They tend to be emotionally more mature. They have high emotional IQ. And they require less of the material world, or just kind of, they require less reward to be gratified. So contentment comes typically fairly easily, okay? They have a loved one, they have a home, they have a way to use their talent, and that about sums it up. They're like, yeah, life is good. Working and creating is its own reward for the laborer. And so they really are kind of people who are very grounded, where we would say, oh gosh, you know, everything's right inside that person. Downsides can be, the laborer can be literal, dogmatic, or oversensitive. Okay, so they have their specific skill oriented, very close to the earth and the body, which can turn into literalism, and they go, so we'll talk about that in their evolution. Because of being close to the earth and that their drive is to care, the labors, what I'm calling the spiritual path, kind of meaning their path toward self-actualization and contentment, is service, love, and devotion. So anything, any work that they do in the world in the name of service, love, and devotion. And the ego trap that they fall into is saying, I know something, okay? The reason for that is that every type has a point of evolution, meaning it's turning into, if it learns the skills of this other type, it will create or self-actualize kind of toward its highest expression. Okay, and then the other side is true. So it has a devolution point, meaning if it attempts to try and do the skills or master the skills of another type, then it will lead to its downfall, stumbling blocks, frustration, abusive power, those kinds of things. So the evolution point of the laborer is the merchant archetype. Laborers can look to learn the value of their own work, to increase their earning power, to enjoy movement and music, to create some fluidity in their earth nature, to stir their emotions, okay, valuing things, high earning power, movement of resources, tension around emotions, understanding emotional states. Those are all talents of the merchant. Okay, so you can see that the laborer really has an opportunity here to understand the value of the work that they do and really increase their earning power. Now, the devolution point of the laborer is the educator. Okay, and we'll talk about the educator and the merchant more later. But the educator is the one who has broad interests, who's really a generalist, who's all about wisdom and educating, teaching. So it's kind of the opposite of the laborer, who's all about the work and doing it and creating something tangible. And so the laborer's narrow focus tends to lead, when they lean toward going toward being an educator, they tend to lean toward rigid and more closed views, okay, which can be incompatible with broad wisdom. So at the extreme, you know, fundamentalism, anger, hate comes from a narrow point of view. So laborers are very good at being specialists. And so from the point of view of yoga and the Dharma types, they would move toward learning the value of increasing that skill, okay, in the marketplace and still keeping their real enjoyment of it. And they would avoid thinking, oh, I know how to do that. I'll teach somebody else how to do that. Okay, so that's why I call it the ego trap. I know. Every type has a spiritual path and has an ego trap that they get caught in. So when the laborer gets caught in the trap of, oh, I know, what they fail to remember is that their view is often narrow. Okay, and because it's narrow, it doesn't allow for the wide view that is necessary to understand or deepen wisdom. I also want to talk to you a little bit about each type and their relationship to money, okay? Because each one relates differently. And right now, since we live in a merchant era, okay, of human evolution, and in the United States, we live in a merchant culture. In fact, most of the first world lives in a merchant culture. Some emphasize money, some emphasize pleasure, but you know, the first world is a merchant culture. So since we're living in this environment of the merchant that highly values merchant values, as a culture, we can tend to talk about money from the merchant's values point of view. Okay, and I know that there's a lot of online learning right now or offerings around wealth consciousness, around manifesting, all of this. And I would offer that all of those perspectives are coming from a merchant perspective. All of them offer how money works for merchants. And they leave out the other four types who need to modify that, not put it aside, but modify that through an understanding of their own type. So hope to give a little mini lesson in that or mini kind of offering of a perspective on that today. So the laborer. Laborers can focus on wealth as a goal, okay? So because they're evolving into a merchant, money and wealth for its own sake will work out pretty well for them. If they learn the values of the merchant and keep their devotion to their work, right, service, love, and devotion, then they will stand squarely in their dharma. And the keys to this money relationship I would offer are owning the value of labor and evoking emotion, okay, two innate skill sets of the merchant to which the laborer would aspire. Okay, next, as we move out from the physical body, we now move to the energetic body. Okay, and here we are in the realm of the warrior. The warrior's drive is to protect. They protect the innocent. They bring about the just. Okay, and they are always setting and up to the challenge of self-mastery. Okay, they want to perfect. They want to purify. They want to keep things innocent, just, and good in the world. Okay, their fear is loss of control. Warriors have great control over their focus and their energy and their physical body because of the energy level. Okay, if you think about a warrior, if you think about athletes, how athletes train and they look at not only their physical training, but they talk about what the energy levels and everything that's involved in training. You can think of a warrior like that, okay? Very keen sense, very high eye-hand coordination, everything energetic that is coordinating the physical body. That is the domain, kind of in the characteristics of the warrior. The warrior's element is fire, okay? Sharp, fiery, burns, powerful, transformative. And again, the body is the energy body. Their intellect is also what we'd call energetic, okay? They're really, really good at movement, at coordination, the agility that's required of the body to affect what they want. And their language is movement. So, very important for the warrior is going to be goal setting. Okay, key to every point of their life. To set written goals in every area and write out not only the goal, but how they believe they can go about achieving it. And this is in order, again, to further take advantage of their ability to further focus their energy and their mind. Because what's key to the warrior is control of themselves and their destiny, okay, and to chase and capture a goal. That's what makes them tick. Okay, so anything that a warrior can do to harness the power of their intention will be beneficial along the path. Now, the warrior's point of evolution is the educator. Okay, a warrior would want, one, a literal educator, someone who's an educator dharma type as a coach, as a counselor, as an advisor, because what the educator is going to bring to the warrior is wisdom. Okay, because the warrior is going to walk the spiritual path of discernment. They're going to acquire knowledge, they're going to focus on their just purpose, okay, for living. And they're going to acquire discernment of what is aligned with their purpose entirely and what is not. Because when a warrior aligns perfectly with their just cause, then they go there directly. Okay? You got to think about this as like hunting. This might be a hard metaphor for this group to wrap their head around. But okay, you put your sights on a target. You then use your own perceptive skills and targeting energy in order to define a course, a trajectory to that target, and you move directly toward that target. Okay, hunting's a good analogy. Sport is a good analogy for the warrior. On the downside, warrior can be angry, arrogant, okay, that too much fire energy. All right, and this happens when they lose judgment. Very important for warriors to acquire enough knowledge and wisdom to have that judgment and discernment about where to set their mark and how to go about doing it and how to protect, okay? Judgment of when and how much force and what kind of control you need in order to effectuate any protection of what is just in society. So the spiritual path of the warrior is knowledge, purpose, and discernment. Their evolution point is the educator because the wisdom and, as we'll see, the linguistic skill, educator's skill is really language and words. The warrior can use this new wisdom to use the energy and focus wisely to attain the goal. So they add that wisdom and linguistic skill on top of their own ability to focus, okay, and control the energy of their body and their mind, and they can use that effectively to attain a goal. Okay, so that would be the evolutionary spiritual path of the warrior type. Now, where warriors devolve is when they attach themselves to the value of the merchant. Okay, so if they put themselves as they are, asked to do in current merchant society, as if they put themselves in the pursuit of money as the just gain, the just purpose, Okay, so there's a difference between having a just purpose that you're targeted at that earns you money, right? Because you have to live, and that you are rewarded for that just purpose financially. There's a difference between that and making money your just purpose. Okay, that's the difference for the warrior. And this is because that the pursuit of money as the aim can bring about abusive power and force. Warrior is very forceful. They are a source of power. And so you want to, as a warrior, acquire the wisdom and discernment in how to use that power authentically and in the right quantity for the job that needs to get done. Whereas the pursuit of money as an aim tends to distort that. Okay? So the ego trap related to this for warriors is thinking my money is my power and security, as opposed to my power and security is within me in order to bring about a just result. Okay, so the power needs to stay kind of internalized and directed at a goal, as opposed to thinking that money is going to create the power and the security. So what beneficial relationship to money? I've characterized that as focusing on the right or just purpose, not the money. Again, that doesn't mean that you cannot earn money in your pursuit of your right or just purpose, even a lot of it. Doesn't mean you can't become wealthy. It just means that your focus of your mind and your energy and your kind of the way you orient yourself is focused on the just purpose, not on money as the goal in and of itself. And the key to the money relationship is knowledge. Okay, knowledge of how money works, knowledge of how markets work, knowledge about the tools that are available. Okay, acquisition of knowledge, and then the discernment in both earning and spending. Now you'll see as we go through that what I have pulled out of this learning that I've done around the five Dharma types, what I've pulled out relating to money, you'll see that the beneficial relationship and the keys to the money relationship come directly out of the chart, the type's evolution point. Okay, so I am proposing that your relationship with money is related to the Dharma type into which you will evolve. So the laborer's money relationship is related to the merchant's values. The warrior's money relationship is related to an educator's values. And we'll see the rest as we go through. Now the merchant. Okay, so before I go any farther, we'll just say that you've probably deduced already that the merchant is really the type whose purpose it is to focus on wealth. Okay, generating resources, earning money, establishing wealth, and acquiring money and wealth for its own sake is fine. Okay, with the caveat, okay, of its spiritual path. I'm going to talk about that in a moment. But that's merchant's job, is to move money around, to acquire it, to allocate it. They're also what Vedic astrologer Simon Chikosky called happiness brokers, okay? They not only allocate money, but they try and teach people the pleasures of life, okay, which can often come from investing money. Merchants are really investors as opposed to workers. Laborers are workers. Merchants are investors. They're looking at what's the value of this, and if I invest this much value, how much more value can I get out on the other side? Okay, they're keen on their intelligence is focused on understanding that value equation, okay? So the merchant's drive is to provide, and not just for their families, although it may start there, but for their community, for society, for even the world, okay? Sometimes merchants might be expressing themselves in terms of feeling like they have something really, really big to do to benefit the world, okay? That they're going to provide on a global scale somehow, okay? Now, their fear related to this is worthlessness, that actually they're not worth anything and their work and effort is not worth anything. So you can see how that would be the flip side of being the type that's focused on money and wealth. Their element is water, okay, which is related to the sensory body, everything we take in through our senses, and related to our emotions, okay? It also, this water also indicates the very agile, kind of flexible nature of the merchant, that they are able to assess a situation and what's needed in that situation and meet people kind of at their emotional needs. Really good at storytelling, really good at tension, really good at marketing. Can be perceived by other types as manipulative or dishonest because they may overstate things in their enthusiasm and their desire to persuade and get people to go along. They can kind of persuade or talk themselves and anybody else into just about anything. So as I said, they're the only type really with the free rein to make money for their own sake, because really they are entrusted with using it for society. And we'll talk about that momentarily, about their spiritual path. So water element, sensory body, okay? And related to the sensory body, their intellect is what is characterized as aesthetic, okay? Beauty is very important. Luxury, all of the sensory elements that go into that, into art, into luxury, into architecture, into being able to look at something or assess it and define the value, that could be considered an aesthetic intelligence. And the language is, and this is my word, is sensation. Again, it's because they're able to tap into people's emotions and convey the value of something in a way that talks people into something, okay? They're going to bring them along for this really enjoyable ride and experience. There was one comment made in the research that I did that, you know, oh, here we go. They attach positive feelings to their own offerings or their products. We see this in marketing all the time, right? Because they're happiness brokers. You know, get this and it'll increase this, 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 and this about your life. And if any of you have, as I have gone through marketing or other business courses, this is what you are taught, okay? Merchants, people who have deeply understood the merchant value system, are now teaching you how to kind of tap in and start to speak this language. So as a business owner in a culture that is a merchant culture, it is important to be able to understand this language and to be able to speak it in a way that's still authentic with you, okay? We can't just completely disregard it. And if you're not a merchant, you can't completely disregard it when we're living in a merchant culture. And if you are a merchant, I'm going to speak now to some of your spiritual path. So the spiritual path of the merchant is charity, gratitude, and contentment. Okay, why is that? Because the merchant, in its water and its ability to get excited and tap into emotions and move energy and revenue and resources around, okay, can tend to excess. That is kind of its downfall. And so merchants need to learn to contain and channel their enthusiasm so they're not overstating things and being misunderstood as manipulative. And also, you know, related to that fear of worthlessness, there's a sense, there can be a sense in merchants of being empty, the empty vessel. And not in the way that we think about that we're an empty vessel through which the divine operates, in a sense of there being a hungry ghost, there being the need for more, 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 more. That can be a merchant trap. All of us can fall into it because we live in a merchant society, but for a merchant type, that can be the way that they experience kind of the personal or spiritual pain. So the antidote to that is to give, okay? Merchants are so good at bringing in and drawing in money to themselves, drawing in resources. So then to balance that out, they give. Their path is one of charity, of giving of their money, giving of their time, and of gratitude for what they have, which then together leads to contentment rather than the need for more and more and more. The ego trap that merchants fall into is also related to this sense of kind of the hungry ghost of needing more and more and more. They lead to excess. They may numb themselves in pursuit of more, 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 or in the pursuit of let's say, emotional experiences. Okay, they may experience highs and lows. Philosophically, merchants are, the merchant type is more prone to abuses of kinds, indulgence in an excess of gambling or an excess of drugs or an excess of sex. It's not to say that all addicts are merchants. Again, we live in a merchant culture, but kind of that ability to go too far, in the need for more to fill up a space, is kind of a merchant dharma type quality. So that is their possible trap. And I characterize that as I'm insulated from consequences. So in other words, merchants, while they're in there, if they're on the path of excess, often don't recognize that there are any consequences for the excess. The evolution point of the merchant is the laborer, again, related to the charity, gratitude, and contentment path. So merchants, when they tune into the pleasure of the creative process, right, work for work's sake, like the laborer loves, and appreciate the value of the work, then they evolve and become balanced, and they start to no longer feel that experience of the hungry ghost. And I related to this, and charity is expanding the merchant's definition of family and their responsibility for whom to provide to. Like the warrior devolves when it takes on merchant qualities, the merchant devolves when it takes on warrior qualities. Okay, so you can start to see that there are pairs, that the laborer and the merchant pair together well. And that the warrior and the merchant are at odds a bit. They support each other if they are each performing their rightful purpose. But when they try to act like each other or perform the other person's role, they start to run into trouble. So, and this is because a warrior's path, like I said, is about acquiring discernment and coming to a place of great judgment. And the warrior attains this, okay? A warrior has the focus in order to attain this level of judgment. Merchant water elements, you know, they're not really about focusing on discerning this judgment. They're like, where's the best time and how do I get there the fastest? So the merchant doesn't on its path acquire this level of judgment, and a lack of judgment paired with force, which is power, which is the other piece of the warrior archetype, can create aggression and a lust for power, and you can understand how that devolves. So a beneficial relationship to money for merchants is very straightforward. They can acquire money and wealth for its own sake, and then give back. Okay, and then they have kind of a direct give and take relationship. Giving allows more to come in, which allows more to go out, and there's that giving and receiving interchange. So key to their money relationship is desire, right? Again, you will hear a lot about manifesting and how it revolves around desire, and that is because it is how money works for merchants. Desire, effort. Now, don't get me wrong, merchants may make it seem to look easy, but they do put forth effort, okay? And they're willing to do whatever it takes to make things happen. They also come to things with joy, and the last being generosity. So let's move on to the educator. The educator's drive is to teach, okay, to facilitate others in wisdom, in acquiring wisdom. They counsel into wisdom, and their gift, their purpose is to help others fulfill their dharma. And in order to do this, educators, as you saw on the indicator, are generalists. It's really beneficial for educators to open themselves up to all channels and be an empty vessel, okay, through which all kinds of information and wisdom and knowledge and experiences can flow, so that they have that broad perspective in order to be able to be good counselors, right? If someone only has a narrow perspective, this is what we were talking about with the laborer. If someone only has a narrow perspective, then they're not really able to help others in coming into wisdom, because it's not broad enough to understand or have compassion for everyone's experience. The educators have great compassion as well as great wisdom. Their fear is survival. Okay, typically educators are not are the lowest paid and the kind of least physically powerful, just philosophically in the way that this plays out. And historically, as you can see, there used to be, and there still are vestiges of this, where those who have wisdom, have higher knowledge, are taken care of by society. They live within pastoral confines, or they are within churches, and their survival depends upon charity. That is not so the case now. There is not the need for an educator to depend upon charity, but because of those two factors, educators still can have the fear that they will not have the resources that they need, or the protection that they need in order to survive. The element is air, very light, very mobile, very flexible, moves around. The body is the wisdom body, and their intellect is intellectual. Okay, it's related to higher forms of learning and knowing, both with the mind and the higher self. And their language is language. They use words. They're linguistically skilled in order to teach, in order to synthesize and explain, in order to counsel well. And their spiritual path is surrender or detachment. Okay, this is the antidote to the fear of survival. Is to surrender to the universe. Surrender to that which they have wisdom of the larger working of things. Okay, and to cultivate detachment to the Maya, right? The illusion of the material pieces. And this allows them to come to greater contentment and fulfillment in their life, and also allows them to further fulfill their purpose of helping bring others into wisdom. Here is something important. If you are an educator, you want to move. Okay, you do not want to stay stagnant. There might be the emphasis to stay stagnant and seated over books or reading materials or at the computer. But you need to move to be inspired. You need to move because of the air element. You need to move in order to get into your body. Okay, you get stagnant when you're localized. Okay, and this can happen a lot in merchant society because educators are subject to their own labor, right? Putting food on the table and shelter over their heads. Also, educators can fall into the trap of being localized by their credential, okay? You fall into the trap of, I am my PhD, I am my law degree, I am what I do. I am kind of the credential that I have achieved with my mind. That's another way to get localized, and you start to fall into then being too narrow focused, okay, and not having that searching, wide, generalized perspective that allows you to be really great at coming into deeper wisdom and encouraging others to do the same. Need to be alone, again, to cultivate the knowledge and wisdom. And here's something interesting to know as an educator, is that you may work in oblivion for a long time, okay, before there are any fruits of your efforts that are seen by the world or recognized by the world even after they are seen. So the spiritual path, as I said, is surrender to this process, surrender to the timing of the universe, all the wisdom of the universe that you have spent time acquiring. And the evolution point is the warrior, which is learn to focus and direct your energy as an educator. Mastery over your energy, okay, like the warrior, helps you focus, okay, helps you not lose heart over the long trajectory of mastery, over the long trajectory of perhaps being in oblivion before your work comes to light in the world. Then to cultivate this, you want to move, okay? Anything that integrates the energy body with the physical body, I would say would be a great thing for an educator to put into their life. So martial arts, Qigong, yoga is great. Meditation, you want time to be alone. You want time for leisure, not just study. Okay, and the ego trap that you fall into is I can. Okay, just like the laborer said, I know, okay, the educator can say I can, meaning I know so much, I must be able to X, Y, and Z. And you want to execute on your plan that your mind clearly understands very, very well. And you think that you can do it alone, and you think you have the stamina, not just the skill set. You may have the skill set, but you think you have the stamina to actually implement, okay? And so that's why you want to learn to focus, learn to be in tune with your energy body, learn to delegate. Do not think that because you know that you can execute. Bring on help on board for that. So as I alluded to, the devolution point of the educator is the laborer. So repetitive tasks, undertaken to simply earn your keep, keeping yourself too narrow by either, you know, staying in one place or defining yourself by a credential, or the other way that it's a devolution in labor is, as I mentioned, thinking that you can physically actually do and implement everything that you know. that is the task for help from another type. Let's see. Beneficial relationship to money. Okay. If you're an educator, you may well have found this challenging. Educators, again, like warriors, can certainly be well compensated and rewarded financially for what they have to offer. The key is your focus, not whether or not you're capable of earning. Okay, so accept financial reward, but do not haggle or fight for it. Again, surrender, surrender, surrender is going to be the tagline of the educator. And it's going to be kind of a fight because you have a very strong intellectual mind. So meditation, surrender, detachment, again, accept financial freely. Learn the as your body of knowledge, as your acquisition of wisdom, learn what is taught by merchants about marketing, about money. Learn it all. Don't sweep it under the rug and say, oh, I have to surrender to this. I can't look at it. That's not what surrender means. You just need to detach from it as your focus, okay? And then you can freely accept financial reward. You can set your fees at a price that is valued according to the depth of your wisdom. By all means, do all of that. And the key to the money relationship, as I've said, is the same thing as your evolution point, allocation of your energy, okay, and surrender. Now we move on to the outsider. So if the educator's element was air, and we think about that as being very like open and having lots of fluidity, and being uncontained. And the outsider's element is space, so it is even more uncontained. And it is everywhere, okay? It is outside of every other type, and it is inside of every other type. The outsider is really the shapeshifter, okay? The outsider's drive is to liberate. Fear is being restrained. It's restraint, right? If you value most freedom, then your biggest fear would be restraint. Both qualities of the outsider. The body is the bliss body. Okay, that is the furthest out from the physical body. So now we've gone through, I just want to touch upon the fact that we've gone now through five bodies. The physical, the energetic, the sensory, the wisdom, and the bliss. So I had mentioned that the types are related to the bodies, and that impacts an understanding, or that impacts the path that you're on. Each of the types must learn, okay, the wisdom and of each of the bodies that precede it. So in other words, if you are a laborer, then if you have the intelligence and the language of the physical body and of your own type, then you're good. You're like, you know what? I'm happy. This is working. And then if you want, you know, as you evolve, you move into the merchant and you learn some of that languaging. If you're the warrior, to have control over the energy body, right, and the languaging of that, you also must have mastery over the physical body, right? Think about it. The energetic body doesn't move without the physical body. It's kind of subject to its laws and restraints. So you have to understand both. You have to speak the language of both. That's how the sheaths work for each of the Dharma types. So as you move out, if your type is associated with one of the outer bodies, the wisdom or the bliss bodies, then you have the particular challenge of learning the language, okay, and the intellect of each of the types. So let's take the outsider would then have the challenge of understanding and learning the intellect and language of the laborer, of the physical body, and the energetic body, and the sensory body, and the wisdom body, until finally expanding and understanding the bliss body. So you can see how if each of the type is related to these bodies, that some of the types would feel, and it's an actuality, that their learning curve was longer, that their path had more twists and turns, that somehow they just couldn't get it. In yoga, this is why. Okay? Because what you came in with, the karma you came in with, dictated what your soul needed to learn here. And so if you are an outsider, your soul is learning each of the languages and experiences and strengths of each of the types, and it's coming to integration and understanding and criticism even of them as part of your path. So the intellect of the outsider then is mystic. Okay, and the language, and again, this is not a language that I found, this word vibration is not the language I found in any of my research or learning about this, but I was trying, there was no word that has been offered for the language that the outsider speaks, and that's because an outsider needs to learn to speak all of the languages. But I wanted to convey that the language spoken by the outsider, the language the outsider understands, is related to the bliss and the mystic body, okay? It's a language that understands the unseen, the unspoken, the other forces in the world that aren't even sensed by our senses, okay? That is a realm of the outsider instinctually. So, let's talk about the outsider spiritual path, because it is a bit of a particular one. An outsider, can express the path of any of the other four types, okay, and evolve. The outsider can express every one of the other types over the course of a lifetime in cycles, okay? Or the outsider could remain an outsider. So the outsider has a lot of choices. The outsider is really the one who is in charge of forging, understanding and forging her own destiny. Okay, they're masters of change. They may take on one identity and then shed it if it no longer suits them. And they may spend most of their lives searching for purpose and meaning. Okay? But when they then do find it, they are potent forces for change because they have lived both inside and outside of civilization and of society, okay? And they can blend disparate entities, different disparate ideas, and create something wholly new. So, there is, as I said, kind of a unique path to self-actualization for the outsider, okay? And it is contingent upon them being vigilant and self-aware, because what happens for outsiders is that they fall easily into losing themselves, and they fall easily into deceiving themselves, and then blaming others. So being vigilant about self-reflection and being honest in that self-reflection is going to be key to outsiders as they move along their path. You'll see that I outlined the path as responsibility, Ruth, respect, and return. And that is the framework of Simon Chokowski in his book, The Five Dharma Types. So what does this mean? Well, first step for an outsider is taking responsibility, okay? Everything, even the stuff beyond your control. So in other words, looking things squarely in the face, okay? Confessing what you see. Okay, and then saying to you, and then the next step would be Ruth. Which is, you know, a resolution to do something positive. Okay, so take responsibility, look at things clearly, take self-responsibility for the path that you're on, determine to do something positive with it. Okay, and then once you do that, you move into respect for yourself for what this choice is. Respect for your experiences, respect for the responsibility you've taken, respect for your talents and what you have to offer, and embodying that. Okay, through unique expression. All right, so respect for your unique expression. This may be something totally new. And then the last piece is interesting. Last piece is don't just stop there. Don't just stop with a unique expression of your talents and what you have to offer and respect for that. But return. Okay, share the unique expression with the world and specifically with the place that you have come from. That's where the word is return. So outsiders tend to go away metaphorically or literally and then assess, integrate, and return with new insights and new offerings. So this responsibility, Ruth, respect, return, is a shorthand for outlining that path. So your evolution point as an outsider could be any of the types or all of them in cycles, okay? But always require or undertake honesty, a unique expression, and then integration of that unique expression back into society. Now, the devolution point can also be any of the other types, okay? Any kind of hiding or losing yourself in any of the other types. And using then the belief that no one understands you, okay, to justify any kind of level of dishonesty or avoidance or lack of responsibility. So what I understand to be really the ego trap of the outsider is somehow lack of responsibility, saying I'm a victim due to some circumstance or someone else's actions, and therefore I must, you know, stay on the outside, stay depressed, not really fit, whatever it is. So that is how I have characterized the ego trap. I am a victim. So the antidote to that is just honest reflection and taking responsibility in order to find and create a unique expression that you then share. Beneficial relationship to money. I'm going to start with key to money. So key to money relationship is same as the key to the path, which is honesty, just vigilance and self-reflection. And then what also
it could be beneficial to your money relationship is that which is beneficial to the type through which you're finding your best expression. So if you are an outsider who's finding your best expression as a merchant, then great, acquire money and wealth for its own sake. And that may happen for you through your entire life, or it may happen in cycles. So you may be an outsider who's in a merchant cycle, and that's the way you relate. And then you might turn into, move into an educator cycle, and things shift, and you take the information and knowledge that you learned as in your merchant cycle, and you incorporate that into the educator cycle, but you move into a cycle of surrender and detachment, and you shift your money relationship accordingly. So that is the approach for the outsider. So that is all I have for now. That is a short, very, very short summary of each of the types, their drives, their fears, their their elements, how that works with the sheaths of the body, which are very important to the way that the yogic worldview works, in the way that energy works. And then each of the types, evolutionary spiritual path, some key words to remember for each of you in terms of where you're headed. And then the devolution types, and how they cause each type to get stuck or fall off their path. So that, I will leave you with that for now. Again, you have a visual chart to help you out. And if you have any specific questions, we will take those up on the Facebook forum and in our small group calls. Thank you so much, and I will talk to you soon. Namaste.